AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Through the first full weekend of the National Hockey League, did you like and do you enjoy the 32 team days that the schedule maker rolls out?
I guess it was the seventh time in league history where we've had it, and we're going to have it again. I think we have it again, next weekend. I think
it only happens twice this year, and it's pretty quick turnaround. I think it's
the 28th of October. I'll be honest. I'm one of those guys that I'd like to watch as much hockey as I can.
It makes it hard, doesn't it?
Really hard. Really hard. Even Thursday night, Darren, where there were only 14 games, it was like I felt I was missing things when I was watching games that I thought were important. So the answer was I think it's cool. And particularly when you can, divvy it up from noon Eastern time to 10 Eastern time at night. But at the same time, I like to watch everything. So it's difficult to watch it all and feel that you know what's going on in every nook and cranny of the National Hockey League.
And for those of us that are like in our rinks doing games, I feel like I missed 2 weeks worth of action.
Right. No, and I think that's part of it too. And then there was Friday, right?
Yeah.
No games.
Yeah, I still don't understand why teams couldn't play back to back, but I'll take a step back and just stay in my lane for once.
Don't forget that, the schedule maker also has to be respectful for rights holders and other events going on. And that was a game 5 night in Major League Baseball. So, you try not to conflict too much. It's like when you don't see very many games at the same time as the Super Bowl. You might see them in the morning or in the afternoon of the Super Bowl Sunday, but you don't see them head-to-head with the Super Bowl.
I got Billy Guerin coming up. He just went through the incredible process of signing Kirill Kaprizov to an extension for the richest contract in NHL history. And as we get ready to welcome Billy in, we got time to squeeze in some news with the Montreal Canadiens. I think this is a huge bargain. I know he's early in his career, but this extension that Lane Hutson signed just screams great friendly deal.
Well, there had been a few stories out prior to a couple of the other contracts being signed, the Lacombe contract and the Hughes contract, that Hudson was prepared to take a little less than Noah Dobson. Dobson's at 9.5. And perhaps the two other deals for the Anaheim defenseman and the Devils defenseman would affect what Hudson was going to make. In the end, he sticks online and he ends up taking just under $9 million for the 8 years. But, what we're seeing now is contracts designed really not for salary, but for bonuses, right? And so the signing bonuses are massive, massive for these guys. Hudson taking $1 million salary.
Yeah, it's front loaded, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
But for every year, the signing bonus is spectacular until the last year of the deal when it's just a pure salary of $7.2 million. So, the McDavid contract, the 2 years is done the same way. The new CBA, we're not going to see that as much. Those kind of things have been removed to that great an extent. So we're not, but to me, this is, I think you're right. I think that he's it's a very team friendly deal. He was very open about it not wanting to become a distraction during the season. So it's just another typical hockey player doing what he thinks is right and not having to be bothered by answering questions for 82 games.
I thought he was going to be a contract with a 9 in it. Maybe a 10.
I think you're right.
Great job for Montreal. And it just opens up some. I know it's just $1 or $2 million a year, but that's significant over 8 years, and that's one or two players.
Well, it could be. Certainly in years to come, when by the time the contract is over, when Hudson's not even 30 years old, I don't think.
And you don't have the state tax 30. Or provincial tax thing. Like, it works against you there.
Well, by the way, all these guys signing in Canada, you know, it's amazing how that works.
Another American, too.
Another American getting ready for the Olympics. What if he'll be on the? You think he'll be on the team?
I would think so, but I don't know. It is one of those decisions, and I don't think Billy will talk about specifics when we bring him in. But he's such a young player, and they do have a very solid base to work with on that that blue line.
Yeah, but well, do they ever? But
maybe one of the extras to start.
Yeah, that's a good point, because unlike Four Nations, where it was just a 23-man roster, the Olympics are a 25-man roster. So it will be. And here's the thing: between now and the end of the calendar year, some players will be able to play themselves into a position. You never know. Remember last year, Quinn Hughes didn't play, right? Four Nations, Quinn Hughes. Had an issue and did not play. So it's going to be Lane Hudson. Can you imagine Lane Hudson and Quinn Hughes on the ice at the same time? Oh, my goodness gracious.
How many goals happen?
Well.
And who's further up ice, the right winger or the two defensemen?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Or just make sure you're playing with a defensive centerman. That's all. Yeah.
You got a 5-player rotation going on there. So that's the big news as we start the second week of the National Hockey League season. Billy Guerin has a couple of different things going. One, he's taken care of in Kirill Kaprizov. How stressful is that? What was that situation and journey like? And the other one will happen in February in Milan. We'll get into it with the Minnesota Wild general manager and the men guiding USA Hockey for the Olympics. Winter Games. Billy Guerin next on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Let's start current and work our way back with everything that's going on around you in the Minnesota Wild. What have you thought of your team through training camp and then the first couple of games?
Good. You know what? I'm always happy with the effort that the guys put forward. They're a hardworking bunch of players. They care. They want to win. I know that. You know, preseason. But you know, it's a good time for us to evaluate where, you know, some of our younger players are. And, you know, the first day, look, we had a great night in St. Louis, ruined their home opener, and then not so great against Columbus, and they ruined ours. But look, you don't want to let things, you can't just say, hey, oh, it's only game two. There's definitely things in our game that we need to clean up. Certain players had got to, you know, play better than they did, and we'll just move forward.
And speaking of the two games, doesn't it really talk about how equal and even a lot of teams in this league are, Bill? I mean, parity is an awful word, but God, this is a league of parity right now.
It really is. The league is in a place where if you're not at your best every night, there's a chance you're going to get beat. And that's a lot to ask of the players. Like, you know, there's going to be some stinkers, in an 82, soon to be 84 game schedule, but you really have to limit them. And, even the teams that are going through a rebuild or the teams that aren't as strong, they can beat you every single night. We always walk into a game saying we can win tonight, but if we're not at our best, so can they.
How well did you sleep the night that Kirill signed his contract?
Like a baby. Like a baby. Yeah, no, it was a bit of a grind. Took probably a little longer than it really needed to, but in the end, look, he wants to stay in Minnesota, and that's the big thing for us. We've got our guy, and I hear, it's too much, it's too this, it's too that, but you know what? Everything's better with him in our lineup and on our team. The alternative was not good, and we did what we had to do.
Was there ever a doubt that he wouldn't sign?
No, not for me, not really. Like, just knowing the kid, it's funny. Agents tell you all sorts of things to, try to get a leg up negotiating, or, he can walk, he can do this, he can do that. And that's all true. But no, in my mind, he always really wanted to stay in Minnesota. But he did have options.
Well, the Russians always have options, because you can always bring up the KHL, right? As something, something to talk about. The other one is, and I don't know how you're going to be able to answer this transparently. But when the owner, when Craig Leopold says we're going to make him the highest paid guy in the league, what comes to mind for you?
Well, we did. and I've been asked that question before. And, hey, look, Craig is he's an incredible owner. He's a incredible guy to work for. The support is there, in so many different ways. But he is passionate. He is passionate about his team. He's passionate about our market, and he just wants to win a Stanley Cup. That's it. And you know what? He like I said, he's a passionate guy. He's emotional about it, and he speaks his mind.
How did you, and did it happen instantly that you had a plan and you just reacted to it, or was there a bigger blueprint out there? When it came out that he turned down, Kirill turned down $16 million, you were pretty front forward on that right away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it got out, but it did. And you know what? I can't let things like that get in the way. Get in the way of progress, of progressing in the negotiations. This is the world we live in. Like, somebody says something to someone, who tells this guy, who tells that guy, and it's out. It's not right. But that's what happens. And, I just can't make a big deal out of it. And you know what? He's got every right to make a decision like that. Players, nobody's holding a gun to their head. Like, they can make that decision if they want. Like, and you just can't let it get in the way.
You were the crossover team a year ago. What are your expectations in that difficult Central?
I mean, the Central's a really tough division, but you just, like I said before, about the parity in the league and the competitiveness of it. It's each and every night. Like I said, you go into any building any night, you can win and you can lose. Like, it's just that even.
I was going to, when we were going to talk about the signing, I thought we were going to talk about Marco Rossi. I didn't think we were talking about Kirill.
Or Gustafson. Yeah.
So how, just from a pragmatic perspective, when you've got a big deal like the Kaprizov deal going, do the other deals, are they working in parallel? Are you allowing yourself an hour to deal with one guy and then an hour to deal with another? How do you manage your time when you're trying to get two or three contracts done at the same time?
I have a tremendous amount of help. Matt Sells, one of my assistant general managers, did the Gustafson deal. He did a great job with it. So he took that off my plate. I handled the other two, but you always, yeah, I mean, you can have simultaneous things going on, and it's just different. They're on different paths, and you just got to jump back and forth, and just handle it like that. But I've got great help around me, and they help me manage a lot.
But some days your head must be spinning though.
Yeah. Some days your head's spinning, and I always try to go back to my playing days and my contract negotiations. And, you know, you're talking to somebody who had two contract holdouts and went to arbitration once. So I wasn't the easiest guy in the world to deal with these either. But I try to go back in my mind there, because I have to try to think like a player. What's he thinking? How's he feeling? What are his real needs and wants and things like that? So try to be empathetic with how the player is feeling.
From a protocol perspective, do you ever talk to the player while it's going on, or is it strictly through the agent?
I don't negotiate with the player, but I will talk to them. Yeah. Sometimes agents don't like that, but you know what? He's our player. I can do whatever I want. They might not like it, but that's, you know what, part of it's creating a relationship with the player too, where you're comfortable enough and you actually do care. I won't talk like the numbers and things like that. Maybe a little bit, but not like I talk to the agents, but they just have to know where I'm coming from as well. And it is business. It's not personal. You just have to, I like them to know where I'm coming from and my side of things. And then afterwards, Marco Rossi and I sat down, we had a nice conversation when he got back into town, and, just kind of going over things. And, I think it's important to do, because, you never really know how an agent is relaying messages to the player. So I think it's important that they hear from me.
Not an exact transcript, but can you give us an example of what an exchange like that might be with a player that you're negotiating with?
Yeah. You know what? It's honestly just being real honest with them and just saying like, hey, look, this is why I was the way I was. Marco didn't have arbitration rights. It's really the one time where I kind of have leverage. His next time around, he's going to be, coming to UFA, or maybe he's restricted with ARB rights. So he's going to have more rights. Just kind of, that's why the way I was, how are you feeling about that? And he was great. I told him, Marco, I really like you. You're a good player. He goes, because Billy, I want you to love me. And I'm like, that's fair. That's fair. And I do. I love the kid. But I love that type of exchange. And you know what? I just think it's really important just to be honest with the guys and give them that information so they understand what we just went through.
Did that happen with you during your situations?
No.
No.
No. No. No, it was, it's a different world back then, though.
Totally.
Totally different world. It just didn't happen. But,
Well, actually, so that leads me to a kind of an interesting question. I always ask guys who coach, when they talk, who do they hear? Do they hear previous coaches? So the managers that you played for, you played for a boatload of managers. You played for Hall of Fame managers, man.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody come to mind when you're sitting across the table negotiating that this is how so-and-so would have handled it?
Yeah, absolutely. Lou Lamoriello and Glenn Sather. Yeah. And, you know, not that I've drawn from every manager that I played for. I've drawn from, you know, every coach that I've played for, you know, and then, you know what, I hear Ray Shero, I hear Jimmy Rutherford. But you know what, like there's a lot that I do and I believe in that Lou taught me. And to be honest with you, Jacques Lemaire, as well. And he was just in town the other night and I hadn't talked to him for a long time, but his voice is in my head. I could tell you that. But I see things and I believe in things, a lot of the same things that they do. And, those are kind of the voices, but yeah, quite a few of the people though, like I never played for Jimmy, but I worked for him and he was a big help. And then I played for Ray for a short time, but I worked for him for a while and then he worked for me. Mm. So he's given me a ton of advice.
Do you hear different things from Glenn Sather and Lou Lamoriello?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, two very different people. You know, Lou with, you know, he could really just draw the line in the sand and, you know, with all the stuff with like, you know, we don't have many rules, but the rules we have, we follow. Very businesslike. And then Glenn with his, the confidence, the confidence and the swagger, that he has. And I always thought that was so encouraging as a player. Like when Slats would walk in, you know, you knew he was there and you knew he was, you know, he has a presence and, he would give us confidence. And, you know, I honestly remember we were playing the Avs one year and we were down 3-1 in the playoffs and Slats gave us a talk at dinner. And he's like, you guys got to just relax. You got to relax. You got them right where you want them. Hmm. We're all thinking like Slats, we're down 3-1, like Colorado, you know, Forsberg, Sackett, Kaminsky, all these guys, Patrick Waugh. And, he's just like, guys, you got them right where you want them. You're gonna win tomorrow night, and you're gonna keep going. We're gonna win the series, and we did. And it just, I just felt like that night, he just pumped some confidence into us. It was crazy. We came back and we won that series.
Fascinating. Both of those two guys, who I think we all know well, have two different auras. One, the public aura, where people think that they're really tough and mean. And then there's the aura behind the curtain that players and team management people deal with. And they see a much different personality of those two guys.
Yeah, 100%. The common thing that they have is that they care and they care about their people, like not just their players. They care about their people. And, you know, they both have a sense of humor. And
how many shoe checks did you get beaten for by Sather? Sather loves the shoe check. He loved. Oh, man.
Yeah. I just. And, you know, I was talking with Lou the other day and he was we were just kind of reminiscing about a couple of things and or actually, I was talking with Jacques. It was Jacques Lemaire. We were reminiscing about stuff, and I told Lou about it, and we were just laughing. They're behind the scenes. You people would be surprised at how caring and they're just great people. Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned Ray Shero, He's going to be posthumously given the Lester Patrick Award in St. Paul in December. What did Ray mean to you? And I mean, the Shero name as a whole is something that's been very special, particularly for guys like you.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, what a great loss for us that we're friends with Ray and for the game. I mean, he just, you know, I like to say Ray led this great life in hockey, like just born into it and just loved it and loved the people in it. But to me, you know, I would say Ray Shiro changed my life. He took a chance on me. He did not have support to make a trade for me from New York Islanders to Pittsburgh. I know that. We always joked about it. But he took a chance on me. He saw something in me and believed in me and brought me to Pittsburgh. And that trade changed the course of my life because we ended up winning the Stanley Cup that year. I ended my career there. I had roots there now. I had a connection. And then when I went and tried out for the Philadelphia Flyers and I got cut, I always say my first call was to my wife. Second call was to Ray Shiro. And I made, I went in a couple days later just to talk to him about the next chapter of my life. And he put me on that course. And without Ray taking that chance to trade for me, I don't know. I don't know what I don't know if I'd be a general manager now. I don't know if I don't know what would have happened, but Ray definitely changed the course of my life, and I'll be forever grateful to him for that. I love the man. I mean, so many people did. He was just amazing, and we miss him. We miss him a lot.
It's a journey that will continue on a couple of different fronts this winter. Let's continue with Billy Guerin from the Minnesota Wild and USA Hockey as we continue on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. On the Olympic front, where are you further ahead than you were a year ago at this time? Because there's certain steps that have already been taken.
Yeah. I mean, listen, with the four nations, I think, we got to take a look under the hood, with a lot of these players. I don't think we'll go back with the entirely same group, but we could. So we're further ahead in that aspect. You know, listen, we're continuing to watch the players that we had on that team plus others. Knowing what we know now about certain guys, there's certain things that are just no brainers. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it does make sense.
Sure, it does. What did you learn out of Four Nations about your squad?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that they have chemistry and their attitudes are right. The chemistry comes from their will to win. They want to win. They know we need to win. And then their attitudes are great because they accepted roles. Nobody brought their ego to the rink. It was all the guys are just playing for the common goal. And that to me is as important. That might be the most important thing. The playing is the playing. Every team's going to have great players, but how quickly can we create a culture and chemistry and the right attitude? And that's kind of the look under the hood that I'm talking about. Like the playmaking and the shooting and scoring and all that stuff, the saves, we know we can compete with anybody in that aspect. It's the other things that are going to help us get over the hump.
What did the world championship win and making history there do to your process? Does it complicate it a little bit because you had guys step in that weren't part of your Four Nations group, but played so well, or can you look at that separately?
Yeah. I mean, and that's what we want. Like make my decisions harder on me. We want that. We want guys We want guys playing hard to be a member of this team. And that win was fantastic. I was there for quite a bit of the time. And like I just talked about, like the chemistry was there, the attitude was there. The world championships for the U.S. for so long, we just didn't put enough importance on it because it's not very popular here, but it's important. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to go there each and every year and compete for the championship like Canada does, like Sweden does, like Finland does, like the other countries do. Like, it is important. And the fact that we put a great deal of importance on this one. And I know people say, probably because it's an Olympic year. Well, that's fine. But even going forward, there's going to be a World Cup. There's going to be more Olympics. We just need to make it important because it's there. It's the World Championships. It's important every year, no matter what. Mm-hmm. It was a huge win.
And I think Tage Thompson basically put you on notice.
Yeah, he did. He did. He played great. And, he did. Clayton Keller did. Frank Nazar did. Zach Werenski went after playing in the all season. And then the Four Nations, he went over and played. Jeremy Swayman did. And so we have buy-in. We need buy-in from everybody. It's important to not just to go, but to go and try to win. Take it seriously.
How much of what you have built as a foundation for with your Olympic program was based on what you did as a player at the Olympics?
Yeah, like I said before, I go back to my playing days a lot.
Yeah.
With the 96 World Cup, you can see how we won, how we came together quickly. Like I was talking about the buy-in, and then we went to the Olympics in 98 and our attitude had changed. It was, we thought we were probably going to go right to the gold medal game, which other teams had different plans. But then, then we go to 02 and we get serious again and we have a great, was that just a spider?
It was.
I thought it was just something on my screen.
No, it was coming right down my side. It was a spider.
Yeah. A little cameo.
Yeah.
But then we got serious again in 02. And we played, in the gold medal game. Canada was a machine that night and they were just better than us. But we were more serious again. So I draw from those experiences and that's why I look at things the way I do.
How much turnover do you think you will have at most?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, we have to see how guys are playing. I think the biggest thing is injuries. Be prepared for injuries. Mm-hmm. And because those are going to be the things that are out of everybody's control. So you just don't have to have, plan A, you have to have, plan B, plan C and ready to go because if players start getting injured, then we've got to be ready.
So now what kind of dialogue will be on a weekly basis? How do you manage that between now and the announcement of the team at the end of the year?
Yeah, we pretty much go, every week. We haven't started doing those calls yet. I just wanted to let everybody kind of get through their first couple of games in the NHL. Camp's been busy. Get our feet under us, and we're going to be starting here very, very soon.
What will you remember more, the 96 World Cup win in Montreal or that opening faceoff at the Four Nations? Like, what stands out in your head?
Well, 96, because I could still feel the punches from Keith Primeau. but you know what? I'm very proud of that 96 team, that victory that we had, it was just, we had to win. Like, we had to do that. We had to, like, you know, make a statement. And it was just very, very proud of that. I'll just never forget that, how wound up we were before the game. And, but then, you know, it's two, they're very similar, but they're very different, because I was 26 playing then, really young. And now I'm 54. And then I look at these guys going out and doing what they did and playing as hard as they did. It's like I'm just so proud of them in that moment, because of how much they care. They cared like we cared. And that's, yeah, I couldn't have been more proud of those guys. Just, you know, not just the fights, it's, or the hits or this, it's how much they care about representing the United States playing hockey. That's what I love.
The amazing thing for me is that, so, you know, you do have a great team, and let's face it, the Canada-USA rivalry now, in my mind, is the best hockey rivalry in the world.
You know, 100%.
When you were playing for the Oilers, or even before that, it was always Canada versus the Soviet Union, you know, and you guys were kind of saying, well, how, we're not there yet.
Right.
And 96 was really maybe the Canada Cup in 92, but 96 was the real, yeah, you know, that was the watershed moment.
Yeah, because I think we stopped getting pushed around and we won.
Yeah.
We had to win. Mm-hmm. Like, it, you know, everybody, like, we focus on the action and this and that, but there was actually some great hockey being played too.
And, yeah, I just find it amazing that, you know,
and we won.
Brady plays in Ottawa. Connor Hellebuck plays in Winnipeg. Quinn Hughes plays in Vancouver. It really is an amazing crossover and the rivalry. And you know darn well that Canuck fans and Jet fans and Senator fans will be cheering for their guys 2 days after the Olympics are over. But for two weeks, they will be the vaunted enemy.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it too. Like, the Canadians are gung-ho for their guys, the Americans are gung-ho for their guys, and the rivalry has gotten better and better and better over the years. And it's such a you know what, because we've gotten better. Yeah. And it just makes for a better rivalry. That it's no good when, you know, one team's so far ahead of the other. That's not a rivalry. But now, yeah, it's very passionate. I think that the two teams have a ton of respect for each other, and just, yeah, but it's very intense. And it's a great rivalry.
It just occurred to me. How do you mean Doug Armstrong was with you in Dallas, and he's managing Canada. How do you manage your own personal rivalries?
Doug's a very close friend of mine. I mean, he's just an amazing. Doug's one of the current GMs right now that I lean on for a lot of advice, or to bounce things off of. And we talk pretty regularly. And it's the business. It's the game. Our teams are gonna go and try to, you know, knock each other out of the tournament and beat each other.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, when I talk about there's a deep amount of respect, and you know what, I know there's players that are friends on both teams and teammates, and you know what, like. Yeah, like we all get along great.
You mentioned the transition 96 to 98, and everybody expected you guys to have a do-over in Nagano for a gold medal, just like the World Cup, and neither one of you has made the final. We're thinking the same thing now from Four Nations to Milan. How do you control everybody's expectations while also pushing expectations?
Yeah, just we can't expect anything. We can't expect to go right to the gold medal game against Canada. We don't know if we're going to play Canada. You know, we don't know. I mean, all we know are our, you know, preliminary round games. Like that's it. So we have to focus on those teams. Like we can't just be, you know, one track mind playing this certain game. We got to get there first. So it's, you know, I think humility is a great club to have in your bag. Like you've just got to stay humble and not get ahead of yourself and just stay on track and make sure that we're just really ready.
How much of a relief is it to have a 25-man roster?
Oh, it's honestly, it's like, oh my God, all these players, like we get to bring all these guys now. We were not happy with the 23-man roster. It didn't make sense at all. I know the Players Association didn't think guys wanted to be there and not play, and that was wrong. They were wrong. But it's good to have the 25 guys. It really feels like you've got all this wiggle room. Like, it's crazy.
What are you telling your players about the Olympic experience?
That it's the Olympics. It's not the NHL. It's, it can be an imperfect, perfect experience. Because
how so?
Because the travel's different. Mm-hmm. The rooms, the hotels or the village is different. The arenas are different. We don't have people waiting on us hand and foot. Like it is a completely different experience than NHL hockey, than like the, as far as everything outside of the game. But if we have to embrace that and enjoy it, because that's part of the experience, and not let it bother us. Like, let's focus on the hockey.
And don't forget your accreditation.
Don't forget your credentials. You'll be walking back to the village.
How do you how do you decide or differentiate? I mean, you got a big NHL job, you've got a big USA hockey job. How do you manage your time that way?
Again, you know what? These jobs that we have, we don't never do them alone. Right. And I have a great amount of help, and I have an amazing group of guys. Chris Keller, who's one of my assistant general managers here at the Wild, he's doing our player personnel. So he schedules a lot of like the meetings and organizes some scheduling and scouting stuff. But then, you know what? I've got Tom Fitzgerald, Chris Drury, Billy Zito, Stan Bowman. And we're all making decisions together on these calls, and it's just a tremendous, you have to have a tremendous amount of help, and you know, I can make the final decision, but I love to hear what other people's ideas are and what they have to say.
How much contact were you allowed with Matthew Tkachuk during the course of his summer and surgery and all that, trying to make sure that he was ready for the Olympics?
I talked to him once, and we had a great conversation. He kind of let me know where everything was and when he felt he would be back and what it actually was. So I'm, you know, and Billy and I are very close too. And we talk quite often, and, you know, we're comfortable with where Matthew's at. He's a big part of it.
Awesome stuff. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. Good luck this year. It was, you kept us on the edge of our seats.
What'd you think of Fleury's last game in Pittsburgh?
You know, I thought he was giving up the short side a little bit. you know, his angles weren't what they, no, I thought it was fantastic. I what a great send off, like, the fact that he was able to do that, and the Penguins did an amazing job with it. And yeah, Flowers, great. He's around now. He lives about 2 miles down the street from me. And then, you know, I see him at the rink. He's been showing up a lot more than I thought he would be. But he's itching to get going. So what an amazing career.
He's waiting for that CBA change and he could become the e-bug.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to hide his equipment on him.
Yeah. Oh, that might be the only way to keep him out. Yeah. I really appreciate it again. Congratulations on the Kirill contract and getting that done. And good luck in Milan.
Thanks. Thanks very much, guys. Enjoyed it.
You and I were both around the Oilers when Billy Guerin was a member of the team, and he talked about Glenn Sather and his swagger. I was always intimidated by Glenn. Didn't sound like the players were, they or Billy at least, bought in and grabbed onto the swagger part.
Well, and that's why I said what I said. I mean, I think both Glenn and Lou, behind closed doors, were so player-centric and so empathetic to what players are going through that we didn't see that personality in Sather and in Lamoriello in the media, in public. And I think that I actually think that Sather and Lamoriello liked it that way. That was the way they worked, and that's one of the reasons why they worked in this industry so long, was because the amount of affection and respect players had for them for the jobs they were doing. What you knew when you played for Sather and what you knew when you played for Lamoriello is they had your back, and that's this kind of sense I don't know about you, Darren, but I see in a lot of managers, and a guy like Billy Guerin fits right into that. And the learning curve that he would have had being around those guys and then working with Ray Shiro, working with Jim Rutherford, he talked about it, how important it was for him and how to create who, in fact, is Bill Guerin as a manager. So I'd always loved asking those stories, because there was a time where I was just scared of both Lamoriello and Sather in my career.
Yeah, Billy's totally different. You listen to him. He's relaxed. Yeah. He's engaging.
Yeah, totally.
You can't ask him
and transparent.
A hard question, because he welcomes the yeah. difficult question.
Yeah, but I think the other guys did too. They were just a little shorter with their answers.
Because we were in different places in our career too.
Maybe, right? But I say this with very proudly that both Sather and Lamoriello now are great friends, because we got beyond what was going on with their teams and we became social friends and talked about their concerns about the game and my concerns about the game. Changed for me. A lot of it changed for me though when I in the time that running Hockey Night in Canada and then working for the league. That you got to peek around the curtain a little bit and understand how those people ticked.
Yeah, I've interviewed them plenty.
Yeah,
I don't remember much chit chat with either one of them.
Well, I know that's right, but that's exactly what they wanted. That's exactly what they wanted. They didn't want.
Well, they got it from me. I delivered.
You'd be trying hard too. I know you. You'd be trying hard. You'd be calling them your BFF, right?
Slats, yes. I knew my place with the other guy.
Oh,
Lou's coming. No way
Lou's
going to
come on the show. By the way, Lou's coming on the show one day. So
and people will get to witness it firsthand.
That's right. Well, I remember when we were doing the old radio show. And every once in a while, we'd have Lou on, and Bob and I would talk, what are we going to get out of Lou today? And the answer would be absolutely nothing. Because he could talk for 10 minutes and not tell you a darn thing.
Or talk for 2 seconds and not tell you anything.
No, he was never like that with us. He would just say, John, that's an interesting question, and I would prefer not to talk about it.
What are your expectations for Milan, and do we need a North American win? We don't really.
No.
History's proven that. No. But for the growth of the game off of Four Nations, man, oh man, it would be pretty big boost.
It would. It certainly. Well,
more fun than needed, I guess would say.
Yes. But do we, you know, I think there's the two answers. I think it's if you're sitting in an executive office in the United States, and you can turn on a country that isn't necessarily as passionate about the game of hockey as Canada is. I mean, if Canada wins the gold medal, it'll be a circus in our country for a couple of weeks, even though the NHL's on. If the United States wins the gold medal, and it's very possible. In fact, I think I might have them as the favorite. You're looking at what they do and say, boy, it'll be great, not necessarily in the hockey circles, to grow the game. You know, there's a ton of people that don't know hockey, don't like hockey, don't understand hockey, that might get turned on to it. You know, when you have a country of 340 million people, that's, you know, there's a chance to grow it. It's a cliche and it's overused, but there's a chance to grow it.
Well, it would have an indirect influence on the salary cap, right? Because companies, everybody, a lot of other people would want to get involved in the game, and then you get hockey-related revenue. And
only if viewership increases. Only if once we leave Italy on TNT and on ESPN, the viewership goes up. Because, I found I loved the game when I watched it at the Olympics. I'm going to watch it now, or I'm going to go to a game now.
I was seeing more corporate sponsors.
But corporate sponsors, they won't. Those emotional buys, I don't think, occur anymore. I think that they have to have cold, hard facts about what's going on, and viewership is up.
Oh, emotional buys still happen. Look at my front door on a daily basis. There's emotional buys taking place.
I'm not talking
being dropped off there.
I'm not talking about Big Joe, the Amazon delivery guy that's at my house every day. You know, I mean
that does take place. I enjoyed that with Billy.
And, yeah, he's a good man.
And what he did with Kirill Kaprizov, he doesn't apologize for $17 million AAV. He did what he had to do.
You
got the player, or you're irrelevant. That's a friend of mine told me that.
You do have to wonder if Kaprizov had left, the long-term ramifications for the franchise.
Right. I also wonder, what if McDavid had signed first? What would that have done to Kaprizov's number?
Wouldn't have changed a thing.
I think it would have.
No, because Craig Leopold already said that he was going to make him the highest paid guy. And, you know, that made
just
it.
Just think it might have knocked it down a million or so.
Wow. What's a million between friends?
Over 8 years?
8 million.
Thank you. That's Crocus Plains math coming right there. But I let you answer first because I didn't want to jump the gun. We're right into it. Looking forward to the rest of this week. What do we got in the docket?
We're going to talk to Phil Pritchard, the keeper of the cup, on Wednesday. What's his life like when he's carrying around that Stanley Cup? And does the Stanley Cup get frequent flyer miles? Wonder if it does.
Wonder if he's got bumped up to first class.
Well, you
show it to the check-in person. Oh, we've got a seat in 2A, Mr. Pritchard.
Well, based on that, you'd think he'd be flying the plane.
No, we don't. We don't want that. No. We'll talk to you next time on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Right this way, Mr. Shannon.